Welcome to this edition of Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson.
This commercial thing, as we've been able to see very much so recently, is driving a moral agenda that is an anti-Christian agenda. They're the ones that are pushing the LGBT agenda. They're the ones that are pushing the, you know, for lack of a better way to explain it, just an atheistic worldview.
Today on Back to Basics, Pastor Brian continues his study through the books of the Old Testament prophets. Join us as Pastor Brian begins his teaching on Zechariah chapters 5 through 6. Now, here's Pastor Brian.
Okay, Zechariah chapter 5. Are any of you reading over Zechariah as we're going through it? Anybody reading over it? Well, why not? I mean, if you were reading over it, you would know how bizarre some of the stuff is. It's kind of like Ezekiel. If you've read through Ezekiel, sometimes you're reading Ezekiel, you're like, what on earth is this about? And Zechariah is similar with these visions. They're really a bit challenging to kind of untangle them and try to get at, you know, just exactly what Zechariah is seeing, what the Lord is showing him, what it meant for them at that time. And then as we've seen, so much of what's happening in Zechariah is it's for the moment, but it's also projecting out to the future. It's projecting out to the messianic age, to the return of the Lord. And as we look at these visions here in chapter 5, that is what we're going to see. So, Zechariah says, "Then I turned and raised my eyes and saw there a flying scroll. And he said to me, the angel, 'What do you see?' So I answered, 'I see a flying scroll. Its length is 20 cubits and its width 10 cubits. Then he said to me, 'This is the curse that goes out over the face of the whole earth. Every thief shall be expelled according to this side of the scroll, and every perjurer shall be expelled according to that side of it. I will send out the curse, says the Lord of hosts. It shall enter the house of the thief, and the house of the one who swears falsely by my name. It shall remain in the midst of his house and consume it with its timber and stone.'" So this is the vision, a scroll that is flying through the air. And most believe that this is a reference to the scriptures. Of course, the scriptures were at that time all written on scrolls. And so in Ezekiel, you have reference to scripture on a scroll. In the book of Revelation, you have reference to scripture as a scroll. And so here, and notice the scroll is written on both sides of it. And on each side, there is this judgment that's pronounced. Every thief is going to be expelled, and every perjurer shall be expelled. And so what's being talked about here is that in many ways, Zechariah is talking about, and we saw this last week, remember when we read about the iniquity of that land will be taken away in one day. So, and we saw previously, we saw how the priest was clothed in those filthy garments and the priest was clothed with the holy garments and so forth. So part of what's happening in Zechariah is God is purging. He has purged the nation of Judah through the captivity and so forth. But it's also talking about the larger purging of the earth in preparation for, again, the setting up of the kingdom. So this every thief and every perjurer, some say that what's really here is the law. The perjurer is the one who, it tells us in a moment, the one who swears falsely in the name of the Lord. And so that would be in the first table of the law, breaking those commands that dealt specifically with a person's relationship with God. You shall not take the Lord's name in vain. And then every thief, of course, the second table of the law was to do with man's relation with other people. And that's where the command to not steal. So some see that the scroll is basically, it's a picture of God's law and the fact that God's law has been broken. And now this is the time when God is going to purge the world of the rebels. And this, of course, would be consistent with what we see in Isaiah, what we see in Ezekiel, what we see in Joel, what we see in many of the prophets. And so that, I think, is a good way to understand what is happening here. So it's predicting this judgment that's going to come. But then, verse 5, the angel who talked with me came out and said to me, "Lift your eyes now and see what this is that goes forth." So I asked, "What is it?" And he said, "It is a basket that is going forth." He also said, "This is their resemblance throughout the earth. Here is a lead disc lifted up, and this is a woman sitting in the basket." Then he said to me, "This is wickedness." And he thrust her down into the basket and threw the lead covering over its mouth. Then I raised my eyes and looked, and there were two women coming with the wind in their wings, for they had wings like the wings of a stork, and they lifted up the basket between earth and heaven. So I said to the angel who talked with me, "Where are they carrying the basket?" And he said to me, "To build a house for it in the land of Shinar. When it is ready, the basket will be set there on its base." What in the world is this talking about? That's a totally legitimate question. That's a very fair question. So again, the first part, the first vision is the purging that's going to take place. God's going to purge the world. You know, if you get a chance, read Isaiah 13. The Lord is going to come out of his place. He's going to purge the world of its iniquity. He's going to cleanse the earth of sinners. He's going to make a human being more rare than fine gold. God is going to judge the world. But there is going to be a growth of wickedness that goes to a point that brings about a final judgment. And that seems to be what is being talked about here. Now, the basket, this is an important point. If you have an old translation, the King James Version, it says an ephah. And you have to understand what an ephah is in order to understand what the basket is and what the basket is referring to. This is not just a laundry basket. This isn't just any old basket. This, an ephah was a measuring bowl or basket. And so it was the largest measurement that you could put into a bowl. So what we're talking about here is something that, the idea is it's something that's reached to the top. It's filled up entirely. And it's filled up entirely with what? Well, it's filled up with wickedness. That's what the angel said. And so here's the basket. Here's this woman in the basket. And she is symbolizing wickedness. But the really interesting thing here is that the wickedness that's being symbolized is not what we would normally think. And the measuring basket is the key to understanding it. It's the wickedness that results from consumerism. It's the wickedness that results from greed and from the accumulation of wealth. And it's the wickedness that results from the love of money. Remember the New Testament, Paul, in writing to Timothy, tells us, for the love of money is a root, is the root of all kinds of evil. Now, the interesting thing is as we project out into the future, one of the things that we sometimes don't think about when it comes to the whole sort of end times picture is we don't that often think of the commercial element in this whole final manifestation of human rebellion against God. But we should think about that because Revelation 18, talking about the judgment of Babylon, it goes into great detail about this commercial enterprise, this commercial center, this place where the merchants of the earth have become wealthy. And every imaginable thing that you could ever purchase is available in that place. And this is the one that always strikes me, even the souls of people. So it goes through gold, and it goes through cinnamon, and it goes through precious stones, and it goes through all different kinds of valuable things, you know, as you read there in Revelation 18. And then right in there, it's, and the bodies and souls of human beings. And so the picture here, this is so fascinating, because the picture here is really one of the accumulation of wickedness that's driven by greed and commercialism that corrupts the world. And again, Revelation 18, that's what the indictment is in Revelation 18. Babylon has corrupted the world. Babylon is a harlot, and the kings of the earth have fornicated with her. The nations are drunk with the cup that's in her hand. Now, I was reading, I quoted David Barron last week. David Barron was a Hebrew Christian scholar, and he was born in 1855 in Russia, grew up under rabbinical tutelage, eventually came to faith in Jesus, finally ended up spending the latter part of his life in England, and wrote a great commentary on Zechariah as well as a number of other things. But it was so fascinating because I was reading in his commentary on Zechariah today, and he is talking about the commercialization that has arisen and is beginning to dominate the nations, and he's writing in like 1910. And the crazy thing was, as I'm reading it, it's like, man, if he thought everything was commercialized in 1910, what would he think about today? And I started thinking about it, and you guys have probably thought about this too, and many of you are maybe of a similar age to me in here. And, you know, there's never a time in our lives. I mean, you always knew that there were mass corporations and things behind, you know, certain things. There was, of course, oil, and there were those great landowners, and there were the steel magnates and, you know, all these people. Nobody ever even knew who they were. The Rockefellers, people like that. I mean, you know, some people knew who they were, but the average person on the street, it's like, heck, I don't know who they are. That guy's like the richest person in the world. Oh, wow, okay. But, you know, we didn't have a whole lot of interaction with anything that we knew that they were connected with. But isn't it fascinating how today, do you know that corporations And commercial enterprises now have, in many ways, more power than governments do. And I'll just give you a list. Google, Amazon, Apple, Disney, right on. You can just keep going. Elon Musk, you know, just keep going right down the list. I mean, who today, it's not just these, you know, these corporations that are in the background. They're kind of controlling things, but they're not meddling in your life. They're not, you don't even really know they're there, but they are there. No, they're in our lives today. We know their names. And we're interacting with them on a regular basis. And we're seeing how through commercialism, there is a moral agenda that is being imposed. And of course, this is mostly originating in the West and then being exported out into the rest of the world. But much of the rest of the world is embracing it. I was in Lima, Peru a few years ago, and I was talking to a group of the younger guys down there. And I was trying to just get a feel for the culture of Lima. And when you go to South American countries, Central American countries, even probably some parts of Mexico as well, you know, there's one part of it where you sense it's very traditional. The culture's still very traditional. They believe in strong traditional values and things like that. And I remember talking to these guys, and I said, well, you know, what is the cultural situation here in Lima? Because Lima is a city of like 9 million people, so it's a significant city. And I said, just kind of from my observation, I said, is it somewhat traditional? And they said, well, yes, for the older generation. But they said, for the younger generation, it's not traditional culture, it's world culture. And what they meant by that is that the younger generation is not taking their cues from their parents or their grandparents or, you know, what Peruvian culture has developed over all these centuries. They're taking their cues from the internet and from TikTok and from Instagram and from Facebook and from Twitter, and you know, they're getting indoctrinated just like everybody else. And again, there's this commercial thing, as we've been able to see very much so recently, is driving a moral agenda that is an anti-Christian agenda. They're the ones that are pushing the LGBT agenda. They're the ones that are pushing the, you know, for lack of a better way to explain it, just an atheistic worldview. And they're the ones that are promoting alternative spiritualities. And at the same time that they're doing this, they are raking in billions and billions of dollars. And so the picture then here in Zechariah is this basket of wickedness is commercialism that leads to moral corruption. But here's the most fascinating thing about it. Now, so there's a woman in the basket. The woman is thrust into the basket, and then a lead disc is placed on top of it. So the picture here is to suppress this. So this is what's growing and developing, but there's a suppression of it. But then it's taken by these female figures who have wings like storks, and they carry it to a place. Now, some say these two female figures with the wings like storks, some tie the fact of a stork being an unclean animal to, you know, there's some uncleanness involved in this. And some have seen it as being carried on, this whole agenda is being carried on the shoulders of civil government and a corrupted ecclesiastical system. A corrupted ecclesiastical system would mean a corrupted church or a corrupted religious institution. And they're the ones that are helping with this agenda. But the fascinating thing is where they take it to. And look where they take it. They take it, where are they carrying the basket? He said to me, to build a house for it in the land of Shinar. Now, this is really wild. The land of Shinar is Babylon. Now, remember, this Zechariah is post-exile. He's writing after the Babylonian captivity. Babylonian captivity is over. Babylon is over for all practical purposes. The Medes and the Persians now control Babylon. That's not the center of their empire. The center of their empire is it's a Persian empire. It's in a different location in what we would know today as Iran. So you've got this reference, though, to Shinar. And there's conversation, debate, if you will, among scholars as to, so Shinar is Babylon. Is this a reference to a literal reemergence of Babylon in the future, or is it symbolic of just the anti-God system that originates back in the book of Genesis, chapter 11, at the Tower of Babel? So if you go back in Genesis 11 and you read it, look at the location of the Tower of Babel. Guess where it is? Shinar. So in a sense, that becomes symbolic of the rebellion against the true God. That's kind of the place where the rebellion started. And then, like we've already alluded to, Revelation 18, it is, you're back at Babylon again. And the New King James Version refers to it as Mystery Babylon, but the most other translations refer to it just as Babylon, and then this is the mystery. So Mystery Babylon makes it sound like it's not the actual Babylon, but it's somehow related to it. And maybe that is it. But if you just take it as Babylon and then there's an adjacent mystery there, not necessarily related to the place, then you realize, well, it very well could be the actual place. So the question then is there a time in the future when that region of the world around the Persian Gulf and the great river Euphrates and the Tigris and these, is there a time in the future when that actually does become the center of wickedness in the sense of the commercial center of the world again?
For the month of March, Back to Basics Radio is offering a book titled, Is Easter Unbelievable? 4 Questions Everyone Should Ask About the Resurrection Story by Rebecca McLaughlin. With Easter just around the corner, the topic of the resurrection of Jesus will be buzzing in both private and public discussions. But many people do not even believe that Jesus was actually a historical person. So how can you help someone else in your life understand the historical reliability of the resurrection of Jesus? And more importantly, what it means for them. Well, Rebecca McLaughlin has again used her gift of using story to powerfully illustrate the truth of Christianity, and this time, she focuses on the resurrection of Jesus. She addresses 4 fundamental questions that everyone should ask when considering who Jesus is. Is Jesus' life historical? Is Jesus' death ethical? Is Jesus' resurrection credible? And is Jesus' offer desirable? In her book, Is Easter Unbelievable?, Rebecca McLaughlin will help you confront these questions in an honest evaluation to help you or someone else you know make the most informed decision you can regarding Jesus and his resurrection. Today is the day to find the hope that you've been missing. Learn today about the resurrection of Jesus and his offer of life to you. The book is Easter Unbelievable, 4 Questions Everyone Should Ask About the Resurrection Story by Rebecca McLaughlin, is our gift to say thank you for your donation to Back to Basics. so we encourage you to call us right now at 1-800-733-6443 or visit us online at backtobasicsradio.com. We'd also like to remind you that all of our other resources are waiting for you at backtobasicsradio.com or by calling our request line at 1-800-733-6443. That's 1-800-733-6443. Our desire is to encourage you in your daily walk with God. We'll continue tomorrow with more valuable insights from Pastor Brian as we study together in the book of Zechariah. Back to Basics is the preaching and teaching ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.